Thank you for including Wisconsin Public Radio in your day. We hope you've learned some things and found it entertaining. To that end, let's keep the ball rolling. This is Spectrum West. This week we say goodbye and watch a shining star rise to its place above. We're going to talk about sociology as well, social media, and teaching young people to care about the health of our lakes, all with the same guest. How's that for economical? Jim Oliver's here with his always unique look at a unique version of a classic story now playing in Rice Lake. Young people still have a chance to experience a day camp at UW-Barron County that keeps the Harry Potter theme going strong. And right here is where we christen this week's Spectrum Voyage. Pure Water Days is coming to Chippewa Falls for an impressive 41st year. And of course, for a bunch of those years, it means the Swampers will be a part of it with a musical show about another chapter of colorful area history. Jerry Way is a Swamper and the guy who puts the words and music on paper. He's a tireless promoter of the area, but not too tired to pay us a visit. I'm curious, is there anything that you will not write music about? I wrote this little line saying, you know, they're working on some bridges and repaving some roads right now. Can we expect some tunes about them?
Well, yeah, probably.
If it's in Chippewa Falls, it's going to be a song.
If somewhere in the Chippewa Valley, yeah.
Well, I see that in jest and admiringly.
That's a big word.
So actually, Chippewa Falls is going to have a wonderful archive of unique ways to document its past. Because as a retired educator, you've been making history a fun class. Has making history a fun class through music been in your mind all along?
Not all along. It's something that just developed the last maybe 20 years or so.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Do you envision it being part of the archives of Chippewa Falls when Jerry Way is on his way?
Yeah, that would be, and
it would be cool to make it part of younger children's learning of history.
Oh,
the history
absolutely.
Of Chippewa Falls.
And I try to pull my things together into some presentable form so they're not just, written on a napkin in a drawer somewhere. They're out there where it's possible to get them.
So tell me what happened 20 years ago. When did this thought come into your mind? And what was your first project?
I started with Wisconsin history, young audience concerts traveling around the state. And then we came into the Heidi Center for the Arts in 2002 is the first one that we did.
Okay.
Pioneers at the Falls, we called it. And it was a combination dramatic piece with community actors and a slideshow of historic photos with songs that I'd written that illustrate the photos and enlarge them.
Yeah, that opened the floodgates.
Since 2002, it's been a very regular thing. So when we do the Swampers with Soda in the Making, it's the continuation of a number of shows that have come before it.
The name The Swampers. I mean, I understand there's a lot of wetness around Chippewa Falls.
We represent ourselves as an aggregation of musical lumberjacks. And the music that we play, I think, wouldn't be too out of place back in the old lumber shanties. I don't think they would run out the door screaming that we're, you know, aliens from the future or something. I think they would feel at home with it. And the Swampers were a category of lumberjack, the lowest paid.
Okay.
They were the ones that went through the swamps, made the roads so that the real hero lumberjacks could go in and cut the big white pines. So we're kind of a humble group. We took the name the Swampers.
So you aligned yourself with those
yeah, we identify with that.
The musical side of logging has been getting a little bit of ink lately. I think in Sunday's Leader Telegram, there was a photograph.
I saw that. One was dancing and one was playing the fiddle.
One was dancing.
And those lumberjacks did entertain themselves in the evening with
And they said
like that.
The fiddle was the instrument of choice.
Yeah, I mean, we have one of those in the Swampers, too.
Because it was easy to carry around, I guess.
Rob Cook plays fiddle and mandolin with the Swampers.
You can almost imagine a tent smoky and smelling like, what, fried eggs and people just dancing around to a fiddle.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. That particular atmosphere would probably describe one of our rehearsals.
How about that thing they have in Allen Park, the rendezvous? There must be fiddle music there.
Yeah, and we're involved with that too.
You are.
Get down there and those reenactors, and usually we do strolling music down there.
Okay, let's talk about the typical day for Jerry Way. Maybe they aren't ever typical. Does every day in Jerry Way's life include music? Is that something you make time for every day?
I would say almost every day. Not every day, but most days. I do some playing. I do a little bit of writing.
First thing? Is that a first
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, yes, it is. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So early in the morning is my time.
It's interesting how clear a person's mind is first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
Because that seems to be the best time to do a lot of different things.
It is. It's a creative time.
We're in the studio with Jerry Way, and we're talking about Jerry and the Swampers, who have a show coming up Thursday and Friday, August 10th and 11th. That's next week. 7:30 p.m. both nights, called Wissota in the Making. It's an audiovisual thing. It's a combination of photos and music. And you had the luxury of having tons of photos.
Right? It ended up that we built the whole show around the historical photos that were taken between 1915 and 1917 during the construction of the Wissota Hydro Dam. I can't imagine what a daredevil the guy was, because all these angles were way up in the air, and he's down in the river bottom and in the trench, and he takes them standing on framework, and he had to. And when you look at the perspective of the pictures, they're just stunning.
Impressive. Back in June, we had Ann Keller here in to talk about the book, The Dam Story. Did you begin writing about it because of the prospect for a book? Was it all coordinated?
I did work with the Chippewa County Historical Society on this. I was with them at an original meeting that they had to organize things with XL Energy, the company that at one time was the Wisconsin-Minnesota Light and Power Company.
And then to Northern States Power?
Yep.
Before we go on, let's have a tune from Wissota in the Making. You have your
all
guitar
right
on your knees.
Yes,
so
I do. And this song is called In Times Like These.
Okay.
Great wooden derricks, cables of steel, across the river hardly seem real, as morning fog is burned away. They stand so proudly in light of day. Every day and every way our goal gets nearer. This dream's a mirror of everything we hoped and prayed for. Every night we feel delight that we've been given a chance for living in times like these. We're dreaming big dreams of things to be, thankful for living where all are free, and side by side we're working on greater tomorrows are sure to dawn. Every day and every way our goal gets nearer. This dream's a mirror of everything we hope and pray for. Every night we feel delight that we've been given a chance for living in times like these. A chance for living in times like these.
In times like these. Cool. Do you ever run out of melodies? How do you come up with melodies for all the stuff you write? Has there been duplication at all? Come on, be honest now.
I'm trying to remember. Sometimes I write the melody first.
Oh, you do?
And then I write the words, and sometimes I write the words and add a melody, and then sometimes they both happen at the same time. With this song, I can't remember which way it went. I have a feeling I maybe did the melody first on this.
It's a good melody. Remind us, if you would, please, of some of the other historical shows that the Swampers have been involved in over the years.
Last year, we did one on trains in the Chippewa Valley.
Yeah.
And we had just a terrific response. Crowds really enjoyed it and turned out. The year before, we saluted the river and started up with the tributaries way up north and followed the river down with all the communities along the way and saluted
that.
Everything all the way down to Pepin and the Mississippi where it joins in. Another show we did, we saluted a poet that lived in Chippewa Falls, went to New York, was a writer in New York for the newspapers, and then came back to Chippewa Falls. But he was a poet called the Poet Laureate of Chippewa Falls, and he has poetry that is still in publication all these years later.
Huh.
You know, and his heyday was around the time of the Wissota Dam around the early 20th century.
I must have had you on the program for all those things because they all rang a bell. Yeah. Here's a little quick aside. How did Fiddler on the Roof go? Good?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Fun?
Full house every night.
Good for you.
It was terrific. It was just an amazing cast. Paul MacDonald was a Tevye to end all Tevyes. It was just amazing, yeah.
When you get scores like that, just as continuing on this aside for one more question, when you get scores for something as classic and as epic as Fiddler on the Roof, are you ever able to play with it, or is that something you have to do straight across the board? You can't.
Well, the instrumentation we use, we don't use the full orchestra there because of the acoustics, so we use the 8-piece orchestra.
Okay.
So selecting which parts would be the key ones, we ended up with a string group with clarinets, and that really had the flavor of Fiddler.
Helps to have been a music teacher, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Use that stuff.
Let's talk briefly about Pure Water Days. Were you involved in the first Pure Water Days at all?
I think in some way I've been involved in every Pure Water Days, being in the parades once in a while. One year Carol and I were parade marshals for it, all sorts of things.
So. Show me the wave. How did you do the wave in the parade? People can't see it on the radio.
I guess it won't do any good in the radio.
No, he's not. He's not even volunteering to do it, folks, because maybe he didn't wave. I don't know. Is it safe to look ahead? Does Jerry Way ever let musical cats out of the bag in relation to what's down the road? Because I know you're never sitting around.
There's a musical comedy that will be an original one that is in March, and I have it all written. Everything's all set to go, but it's not announced yet. So it's a deep, dark secret, and I can't tell you what it is. Very soon, within the next couple of weeks, it will be announced. So stay tuned.
I will be on the edge of my seat. Is that about as far ahead as you work, or do you work further ahead?
Yeah, that would be about as far ahead. And then when this Swamper Show is done, I'll probably start on the next Swamper Show for next August, about a year ahead on things.
Are you able to carte blanche choose what the Swamper Shows are going to be about, or do you have to know what something going on in Chippewa Falls relates to it?
I get to pick myself, I guess.
The book here on the lake and stuff, that was kind of fortuitous.
Yeah,
but
usually something will bubble up to the surface, and I do have my idea for next Swamper Show. That's also top secret, though.
I thought I had some clout, but I can't get the scoop. I thought Jerry and I were friends. Anyway, Jerry Way, the Swampers, Wissota in the Making, it's called. It's Thursday and Friday, next Thursday and Friday, August 10th and 11th, at the beautiful Heidi Center, 7:30 p.m. That's Lake Wissota, folks. Jerry, thanks as always.
Liz. Thank you, Al.
This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Support for WPR comes from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona, presenting multiple exhibitions annually while home to art inspired by water, including Washington Crossing the Delaware by artist Emmanuel Weitzer, mmam.org. Support also comes from the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, Minnesota, home to rescued bald and golden eagles with up-close eagle experiences, wild eagle viewing, and interactive exhibits for all ages. NationalEagleCenter.org. Here's a Spectrum memo for you. This is the weekend of the 10th Blues on the Chippewa at Memorial Park in Durand, Wisconsin. You don't find many festivals with this much music without an admission fee, but it's free. A non-perishable food item or cash for the Pepin County Food Pantry is appreciated, however. The festival supports numerous local charities. I counted 20 musical acts at least between Friday evening and Sunday evening. The website, if you want all the details, is bluesonthechippewa.com. You like Harry Potter? Well, later this month, UW Barron County in Rice Lake presents a literary day camp for apprenticing wizards. It's a Western Wisconsin version of a very popular young people's experience that's been going on over 10 years in central Wisconsin under the guidance of Holly Hassel, professor of English and more at UW Marathon County. She's a fan of J.K. Rowling and has been from the beginning. I've seen some of the Harry Potter movies. I watched all the actors and actresses grow up. She's done doing those, right?
That has been her assertion since she wrote the last book. So when she first conceived the series, it was like the early 90s. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think is so kind of impressive about her as a writer is that she really did conceptualize this from the beginning as mm-hmm. like a 7-book series. She had the whole thing mapped out. And this was not just like some authors kind of slapping things together, you know, writing one and then it's popular and so they make a sequel. Like, she really had a very coherent vision from the get-go. She knew how it was going to end. And I feel like you can really see that in the books. So she said, yeah, I'm not going to write any more Harry Potter books because the story is sort of complete. This year she's coming out with two kind of nonfiction companion books that are more like a guide to the series, like a reference work. But I don't imagine that she's going to come out with another novel.
If it were Hollywood as usual, you would envision Harry Potter's kids becoming centers of attraction for a movie. So, yeah, I guess the reason I asked that is I wanted to know whether I should or should not use the past tense saying this. Mm-hmm. The Harry Potter thing was quite a phenomenon. And I'm wondering why for so many different age groups. Here's my take on it. It's one of those things, there's several different kinds that we encounter over our lifetime. It's one of those things or places that we wish were true. We wish it was we wish it was real. We're kind of living the fantasy. Is that a good take on it?
I think that is a good take, and it's really, really hard for a writer who's writing in the fantasy genre to create that kind of three-dimensional world. It's very challenging to add a level of reality to an entirely imagined place or time, because she has this really fully fleshed out alternate world and you believe it exists. She's so meticulous in accounting for the culture and the physics and the geography and all of that. And so I think that's what makes it so appealing. And I think that's what people, if you don't mind me switching to the camp, is that I think that's what kids love about the camp. And I mean, I can't tell you how many times over the last 10 years I've had people say to me, oh, you should do a Wizarding Academy for adults. Like, they have a sense of like wanting to like visit this place that they, you know, wanting to inhabit it, that the place that they've read about. And when we first started doing Wizarding Academy 10 years ago, I think we sort of imagined, so this was 2008 and the last book came out 2011. I think we sort of imagined that it would be like, okay, well, it would run its course and, you know, maybe it wouldn't be such a big phenomenon that it was in the early 2010s and the books were coming out. But I mean, this year we had our biggest camp ever at Marathon. We had 55 kids and 15 volunteers that come back every year to help out. Kids who started at the camp in 2008 who are now, you know, in high school and college, and they come back and spend the week as, you know, quote-unquote heads of house or sort of camp counselors because they love this world. And yeah, I'm going to be interested to see if there is a point when the kind of the novelty wears off, but it doesn't seem like that's anytime soon.
So what's the camp like? What's a day at the camp like?
I like to think of it as like a Hogwarts immersion experience. So it's sort of like what a kid imagines that Harry Potter's world would be like. And so we try to create all of the elements that would be a lot like a day at Hogwarts. The first day of camp is very much like Harry Potter's first day at Hogwarts, where the kids come and they get sorted into houses and we're sort of introduced to all of the norms and the cultures of camp. We do compete for a house cup, just like in the books. So the kids, much like in Hogwarts, they would be in classes and they would be awarded points. We do all sorts of different kinds of activities that the kids can earn points for. And so we have like a kind of a friendly inter-house competition throughout the whole week. And I think that's one of the things the kids really like, is they develop this team identity and they really kind of identify with their house that they've been put in. And they develop a sense of teamwork and collective identity over the course of the week that they're really excited about. They earn points throughout the week for art competitions. We might do an art or a creative activity. We might do a trivia contest. Every day we do Muggle Quidditch, a version of Quidditch. We don't have brooms, but it's a Muggle version of the Wizarding sport. And the kids love doing that every day. So.
And it's coming to UW-Barron County. I know that there was some sort of a deadline that I saw. That particular deadline has passed, but if young people or their parents or grandparents have heard this conversation, can they still get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. They can contact the UW-Barron County Office of Continuing Education, and we're absolutely still have room for registration. You can do that online, or you can do that by calling their office. It's kids entering into fourth grade and through ninth grade, and so we have a whole range of ages.
And it's a day camp.
Yep, it's a day camp. 9 to 4, and each day we have, like I said, a whole range of activities. We get to go all over campus. We're doing a Horcrux hunt, so a kind of a scavenger hunt, the Horcruxes from Book 6. A lot of different kinds of fun, engaging things, friendly competition, creativity, new friends.
And be sure to let me know if you ever do come up with one for adults, because it sounds like...
I think I'm going to have to.
Holly, thanks so much for being with us on Spectrum West.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Holly Hassel, professor of English, and a lot more, by the way, at UW Marathon County. Wish I were 4th to 9th grade, I'd go. If you know somebody in that age group, you might want to bring it up and see what's going on. Social media, sociology, and phosphorus in lakes, all from the same guest coming up. And Michael Johnson died last week. We have a short goodbye yet to come on Spectrum West. James Oliver. You know, I bet if he would have gone from community and amateur theater to the big stage or the big screen, that might have been his name, James Oliver. Anyway, Jim Oliver graces this radio stage again this week with a look at something unique going on in Rice Lake.
The Northern Star Theater of Rice Lake opened its production of Cinderella this week. It will run through Sunday and next Wednesday through Sunday. There are no Saturday performances. This production of Cinderella was adapted by the Minneapolis Children's Theater founder John Davidson from the fairy tale by Charles Perrault. Joining us by telephone to talk about this version of Cinderella is the director, Amy Myers. Well, I asked you to write an autobiography, I guess is the term. I love all brands of theater, but my favorite shows are those with a quirky little twist that allows us to produce a great show while giving it a different perspective. So I get the idea this isn't your regular garden variety Cinderella.
It is not. When people ask me about this Cinderella, I describe it as it is not your mama's Cinderella.
So how does it differ from the Cinderella we grew up with?
For one thing, it's a much shorter show than the Rodgers and Hammerstein version of Cinderella. And it is extremely family-oriented. It's done in a panto style. Pantomime style of theater, which brings in a lot of different elements. Some of those elements are over-the-top comedy, very colorful, lots of pop culture references, lots of interaction with the audience. One in particular that's most obvious in our production is gender crossing in terms of male actors playing women and women actors playing men.
That sounds interesting. I'm mildly confused. I read a review of the Minneapolis Children's Theater production, and they talked about pantomime. That gives me the impression that people are just walking around not saying anything but just making motions. Is that close? Or
and honestly, that's what I thought, too, when I first – well, actually, I read in the program when we went to go see it in Minneapolis that it was done in panto style, and I thought, I've never heard of panto style, so did a little bit of research, and actually panto is short for pantomime, and it brought me to Shields and Yarnell from when I was a kid, and the traditional pantomime, you're not talking kind of thing, but that's actually not what it is at all. It's a very specific type of theater that is, as I said, all of these different elements of over-the-top comedy and gender crossing and the pop references and then the music that is present-time music.
Mm-hmm. As long as you bring up the music, let's talk about how you developed the score. You didn't get a score from anywhere. You produced it yourself.
We did produce it ourselves. We called the folks at CTC and asked when we would be getting the music score, and they said that we wouldn't because we had freedom to do what we wanted to with the music. So there were some pieces in their production that we had seen that we loved, and we didn't want to change those. So we kept those, and we sat down and had lots of table work that we did as a cast and crew and created lists of songs that we liked and we thought would be appealing to our audiences and would get them moving and feeling like a real part of the crowd. So we whittled those down to the ones that we most loved, and those are the ones that we use. So we have quite a variety. It's everything from Anna Kendrick, the Cup Song, to a little bit of Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton, and some Whitney Houston.
Wow. You don't have an orchestra, though, you told me.
We do not. We have a DJ spinning all of our music, and he's terrific. He does a great job, and he's actually a very active part of the show. When people arrive, he will be getting them ready and in the mood. Kind of, we were talking about it today, and it kind of felt like a minor league baseball game.
Oh, really?
Where you've got music kind of getting the crowd ready, and there are all kinds of little fun elements of the show that make people really feel like they're part of it. So.
Uh-huh. We're talking to Amy Myers, who is director of the Northern Star Theater Company production of Cinderella. Is the show just for children, or will adults enjoy it as well?
Actually, it's for everyone. It's that typical kind of Disney humor, I guess, without being Disney. Lots of things that the kids will enjoy, jokes that the kids will get. But we also play to the adult audience as well. Nothing that's not family-oriented, nothing that is risque or anything like that at all. People should feel free to bring anyone from 2 to 92 to the show, and I think they'll find something for everyone.
Does it hold true to the basic Cinderella story, the poor girl, the mean old stepmother, and all that kind of stuff?
It does. Mm-hmm. It 100% does. Cinderella, the gal who is the straight character in the show, obviously, our bit of cross-dressing are the stepsisters, who are played by men, and they are our over-the-top humor, along with the stepmother, who tries to keep them reined in a bit. But the rest of the show is very straight, and it's very true to the story of Cinderella. You'll see everything from the ball to the fairy godmother and Cinderella's transformation by the fairy godmother. So a lot of that stays very true to the story of Cinderella, yes.
In your biography that I forced you to write, you also said you like technically challenging theater. Does Cinderella fit into that category for you?
Yeah, it does, actually. Mm-hmm. We have puppets that we had to figure out. We had the challenge of our production is done in the round, and we have a chorus. And another part of pantomime is their job is not to function as a typical chorus, as you would in, say, South Pacific or Music Man, where everybody gets on stage and sings a gigantic number. That's not how our chorus works. Our chorus serves to provide what they call oleos in theater, which are short little skits that are in between the scenes that allow for costume changes, allow for scene changes, things like that. But because we do ours in the round, our chorus actually serves as our stage crew for the first half. So they come out and they do all the set changing while they're performing their chorus numbers. So it's kind of nice. The chorus gets their moments to shine without the main characters on stage several times throughout the show. So that's been kind of fun for us.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the main characters. Who are the principal actors in the show?
Our principal characters, Cinderella is played by the lovely Promise Benson. She is super talented, sweet and innocent, definitely compared to the stepsisters. Our stepsisters, the character of Dorcas is played by Steve Adams, and the character of Pearl is played by Christopher Orson. Our stepmother is Lindsay Schnacki, and Prince Eric is played by Luke Morris.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you get tickets to see the show?
There are a couple different ways. You can go to our website. The easiest way to find our website without me having to spit out a really long website address is if you Google Northern Star Rice Lake, you'll find it. It'll be right at the top. And you can go right to our website, and there will be a link to purchase tickets there. Or you can go to our ticketing vendor, which is Brown Paper Tickets, and search for us by the city or the venue, and they'll be able to help you out there.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can call our box office at 715-736-4444 and leave a message, and we can get you taken care of.
Great. Well, we've been talking to Amy Myers, director of the Northern Star Theater Company production of Cinderella. It runs through Sunday and next Wednesday through Sunday at the theater in Rice Lake. There are no Saturday performances. Amy, thanks so much for being with us. This sounds like a fascinating show.
Thank you. We're pretty excited and we're really proud of it.
Again, if telephone is your ticket outlet of choice, the number is 715-736-4444. The Northern Star Theater in beautiful Rice Lake, Wisconsin. I tell you what, before he leaves the building, let's see what else is on stage in Western Wisconsin. Mr. Oliver, take it away.
Thanks, Al. The comedy Glorious will play through August 12th at the Red Barn Theater in Rice Lake. Through the Looking Glass will be presented by the Eau Claire Children's Theater at 2 p.m. Saturday at the Oxford Theater. The Children's Theater will also present Miscast August 11th and 12th at the Oxford. Bye Bye Birdie will be staged next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday by the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond. Rumors, a production of the Festival Theater, will play today, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Franklin Square Black Box Theater in St. Croix Falls. And the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild will hold auditions for Sister Act at 7 p.m. Monday and Tuesday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire.
Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Having a good time? Hope you are. Support for WPR comes from Simply Done in Downsville, offering fair trade gifts and a space for meetings, retreats, or classes in their historic schoolhouse overlooking the Red Cedar Valley. Simply-dunn.com. Support also comes from Bicycle Lacrosse, announcing Bike Fest, September 1st through the 4th. More than a dozen scheduled rides from bluff tops to neighborhoods with live music, food, and more. Details at bicyclelacrosse.com. Nels Paulson is an associate professor of sociology at UW-Stout. He's also co-director of Lakes REU, a summer research experience for undergraduates, working to better understand the root causes of and solutions for phosphorus pollution. So with one guest, we have topics about which we could dedicate an entire program, because you know we love talking about the science of ourselves, and what's more important than clean water in a place where water is so much a part of our landscape. Simply put, sociology is the study of the development, structure, and functioning of human society.
Yeah.
We hear about arrested development, lack of structure, and dysfunction a lot today. So maybe your class's focus should be on the absence of those things.
Well, it's...
Do you talk about that stuff?
We do, yeah. It's a central part of sociology. Okay. The whole idea of sociology as a discipline is that it emerged from people trying to ask more critical questions about where their personal troubles were coming from besides just their own good or bad decisions. What people started realizing in the 19th century as they started to study things sociologically is that a lot of our personal happiness or personal troubles don't come just from our choices, but rather from a lot of values and behaviors from a lot of people that aggregate up and they end up influencing us. And so trying to get a sense on what those invisible forces are, it becomes like a really important thing for all of us, an empowering thing when
sure.
we start to realize that our choices matter, but our lives aren't just determined by our own actions.
This is going to sound weird. And the moment it came into my head, I said, well, you want to ask that? Because you're going to sound like a dummy. But I thought, why don't I ask it anyway? Are all social problems man-made? See how stupid that sounds? Society is mad.
There's certainly a lot of problems that people experience that aren't seemingly social, in that we experience an earthquake and mm-hmm. our house gets wrecked.
Our reaction to it is social.
Our setting up living conditions where some people are disproportionately put in a position of risk to earthquakes
is
a social problem, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the one epoch in the history of the planet, we call it the Anthropocene epoch, where one species has come to shape the entire planet. And so it's really hard to separate out people from nature because people have now really structured all of nature, our waters and our land and our air. And so since we really are at this new era, we can say that our problems are driven by social origins, not exclusively, of course.
Yes.
But you know, the decisions made by people have tremendous impact on everything.
There are a lot of us, given the social quote-unquote problems that we're enduring nowadays, that say to ourselves, boy, I'd love to go back to the good old days when there were horses and buggies and stuff. But they had their own huge
Absolutely.
Set of social problems. Yeah. Much tougher living then.
You know, the way that we think about our relationship to one another hasn't changed. There's this English aristocrat back in the 17th century who was quoted as saying, civilization is a slow process of learning to be kind.
I read that.
And he ended up getting murdered. But
in an unkind gesture.
I think that the things that change are, yeah, certainly transportation and energies and mm-hmm. things that are really, really valuable to us. But the thing that is most important is to remember the way that we relate to one another outside of technology in terms of being kind and empathetic. That is what has created stability and high quality of life and all these kinds of things over centuries.
Nels Paulsen with us in the studio, Associate Professor of Sociology, UW Stout. A couple of things we're going to talk about today. We're going to segue into social media now, and then we're going to get wet, believe it or not. social media, research. Is there a lot of research going on into the effects of social media?
Absolutely. I mean, in the 1980s and 90s, it was seen as like this new thing. And all these academics wanted to start researching it. But now it's really hard to do any kind of research, whether it's about issues of race or issues of economic inequality or issues of gender or water pollution, without bringing in the topic of social media and the internet, because it's become a way that, at least in the U.S., so many people almost primarily relate to each other, really across the board, seen as a qualitative difference in terms mm-hmm. of the research on the topic of social media. And so it has huge consequences for all of these other social issues. So, you know, traditionally, people, of course, communicate face-to-face, a little bit of telephone.
That's getting less and less.
And it's getting less and less. What is really, really valuable, so there's this old sociological theory about how meaningful it is to interact with new cultures, and that you don't develop new ideas unless you move away from your own culture a little bit. So you move from one town to another, one country to another. You visit a city, and you gain new knowledge from that new culture. And this is something called social morphology. You develop innovation and creativity. There was a lot of theorizing back in the 80s and 90s with social media and with the internet, rather. We're going to have so much innovation because people have access to so much new knowledge and new cultures. And I think what we've missed out on is that while we've had access to a lot of new knowledge through social media, we don't necessarily have the other component that you get from visiting new cultures and experiencing new cultures. And that's very human interaction and face-to-face, where we focus on developing a friendship first. So you see a lot of people getting these huge heated arguments over the internet and on Facebook. And you know, that's not new, but you don't really get to some sort of resolution of compromise and understanding and these kinds of things without having that emotional connection. That emotional energy needs to be coupled with that development of new cultures and new knowledges in order for it to actually be useful to you.
It's
right?
much better to share ideas than to trade insults.
Exactly.
Which is what happens on social media so often because have their anonymity. It's crazy. Plus, the thing that I don't like about social media is that we communicate too fast.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, thinking is almost like a premium thing to do nowadays.
Right.
We don't think through problems anymore. We go after it on the internet or social media trying to find an answer to it very quickly. And we don't have that mental, exercise.
Yeah, and I think what people do is they go and find some sort of article, whether it be from some sort of legitimate source or not, that defends their position, and they'll post that in response to somebody else's post. That kind of eliminates the whole part of trying to understand the point of the original post. after the election, I posted a couple of things on my Facebook site. One that was from Glenn Beck, and then another thing that was from, I don't know, Huffington Post or something like that. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends—
Was this a test?
No, I just thought
you
there
just
were two
it?
Good arguments. I just wanted to offer a conservative and liberal kind of perspective that I thought were both very sophisticated at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a friend just jump on the Huffington Post, and I don't think he actually even read the article, or he maybe didn't see how I talked about it in the first place.
Sure, sure, sure.
And he said, "Nels, I thought you were so smart. I can't believe you post this crap, this liberal crap."
Yeah,
and he didn't even notice like I had posted this Glenn Beck thing a little bit earlier. And so here's this friend of mine. You know, I don't know if we see each other as friends anymore because he was so reactionary to this. And I thought I was doing a great service to open up dialogue.
Yeah.
But social media really changes that whole idea of understanding and dialogue, I think.
I'm trying to. I mean, I do it all. I only have a Facebook page because of children and grandchildren. But I text and I email and I do all the stuff that all of us fast lane people do. I'm not in the real fast lane. But I still don't see a lot of other than defining it through the word convenience, how it's doing me a heck of a lot of good.
You brought up a couple of great points. The communication I've had with my relatives is far beyond anything that I could have ever achieved in the last 10 years without social media.
Yeah.
But it's not superseding the important human connection. It's augmenting it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that's perhaps the role that is most useful for people to think about is how social media can augment that human connection, not replace it.
Yes.
This is actually a segue into our research this summer on water pollution.
Yes, let's go there. Why don't we?
We very purposefully make sure that dissemination of all of our research doesn't just go to a bunch of academics and through journal articles or that it's just published on our website.
Which is why you have events, one of which we're going to talk about.
Exactly. So what's been most meaningful the last few years is that we have at very public places, coffee shops, bars, that we have the students create posters of their research. And we ask the community to come in to have conversations with the students about their research, but also conversations with one another about the research in the sense that, you know, just generating great science, sociological or biological or otherwise, it's not really all that transformative. The transformation happens with the very human interactions.
Okay.
And so by using social media to promote these events, that's great. But each year, after they get done with their research, they publish articles in the Dunn County News. And so each week we have a different article coming out summarizing the research, and that's all wonderful. But, you know, every once in a while you get a public comment that says something like, "I don't know who this student thinks they are," or something like that. Well, if we just left it at that, perhaps that's all people would take from this research. The more valuable thing, I think, is to make the experience of new knowledge a social event, right?
We're talking about lakes. REU. Now, we should tell you that LAKE stands for Linking Applied Knowledge and Environmental Sustainability. And yes, we did a quick segue from social media to to water pollution. But Nels, and thank goodness he is involved in this as well. There is a residential two-month LAKES project on now. You did have a public forum on Wednesday in Menominee, and there's another coming up Friday at Gilligan's in Shatek, 3 to 6 p.m., and that goes along the lines of you making sure that this stuff gets to the rank and file, not just academics.
Absolutely, and we've had this at the Rod Deal in Menominee each year for the last 4 years.
Oh, you have. Okay.
And we've had several hundred people come out each year, and it's a wonderful event because we see them talking with the students and learning about the research findings, which are all very well and relevant and great, but then we see people talking with each other so much more. I think word's gotten out throughout the watershed. You know, it's a 1,900 square mile watershed from Birchwood all the way down to Menominee. I think a lot of other people throughout the watershed have wanted to have these kind of conversations too.
Cool.
And so we decided to have a second event up at Shatek, about three quarters away up in the watershed. It's also along this chain of lakes that is very, very meaningful culturally and economically to Barron County. You know, we think it's going to be a really great space there at Gilligan's right on the lake for people to, again, learn about this new research, but also to develop a very human connection over water with one another.
We talked about social media. You're actually holding a social.
Absolutely.
You know, at Gilligan's.
Yeah.
And that's the face-to-face stuff.
Absolutely.
I mean, you're doing hands-on, get your feet wet. The Lakes REU, the REU part of it stands for Research Experience for Undergraduates.
Everybody has their own little thing that they can contribute to improving water and land that serendipitously adds a whole lot of other value to their lives.
I think the key word of the day that I'm going to remember is augment. I like that word.
Yeah.
We don't use that word enough.
No.
And we don't augment enough.
We don't, yeah.
It should be an action verb.
It should be. It's a good one.
How about T-shirts with the word augment?
I think about my dad. He is an educator all of his life. He was a high school principal, and he is now a professor, directs a doctoral program in education. And he very easily could have done a good job and gotten by. But he just took a little bit extra time to relate to people, a couple extra hours to make sure his job was done a little bit better than bare minimum. I think it turned him into a person who was very much appreciated by his colleagues and his communities, but he made a much bigger impact in his personal life and his professional life without being a genius. He's like me. He's a simple man. But spending a little bit of time augmenting his job in some slightly different ways made huge payoffs that he couldn't have thought of ahead of time.
I think we need to run with that word.
I talked with my students about this last semester in a sociology of leisure class I taught.
I could take that one and probably pass it.
I don't think the students thought it was what it turned out to be when they were going into it, because I ended up having them read a lot of heavy philosophical writings and theoretical writings, because I was asking them to think about justice through the course.
Okay.
And to think about how they could structure their own leisure lives so that they have fun, but also do things that benefit society. Working towards justice while still enjoying your leisure time. Because a lot of times we get very into ourselves.
We think we deserve leisure, and leisure needs to be just kicking back.
Yeah, exactly. Or shopping. Or, yes, you know, something that focuses on ourselves. And so I asked them to, speaking of social media, expand the Explore Menominee website. Mm. And so they created a dozen different scenarios of three perfect days in Menominee for each season and in different categories, one category of sports or a category of outdoors or a category of just entertainment in general, where they make recommendations for how to spend three just perfect days in Menominee where people enjoy themselves and have fun, but it's also to the betterment of the community. And cool. I think that mindset of augmenting your leisure time is where we can make the most gains in society.
Mm-hmm,
we can experience new cultural things and new people and certainly enjoy ourselves, but not really make it about ourselves.
Yeah. Wasting time is a shame.
It is.
Because time is really all
we don't
have
a lot of it. No.
Always fascinating. Nels Paulson, thanks for being with us on Spectrum West.
All right. Thank you very much.
Again, Friday's listening session about water quality is at Gilligan's in Chautauqua. It's from 3 to 6 p.m. Nels Paulson, somebody who augments his role of mentor in the classroom with mentor on the water. And it means giving up some of the feet-up function of summer. Good for him and all those who put words into action. Last week, a friend of WPR and Spectrum West lost his life. And as a result, America lost a master of song.
After you go, I can catch up on my reading. After you go, I have a lot more time for sleeping. And when you're gone, looks like things are gonna be a lot easier. Life will be a breeze, you know. I really should be glad, but I'm bluer than blue, sadder than sad. You're the only light this empty room has ever had. Life without you is gonna be bluer than.
He was a guest here last October, and I was fortunate to spend time on and backstage with him during the holiday edition of the Big River Radio Wave last December. Michael Johnson, writer of hits like Bluer Than Blue, That's That, Give Me Wings, The Moon Is Still Over Her Shoulder, This Night Won't Last Forever, and more. He was a longtime Twin Cities resident, performing scheduled and surprise events at various venues. His songs were things you remembered and sang with. His guitar playing was that of a master, and his personality was anything but that of a star. He was a nice guy. Often getting older is going from cool and busy to more meaningful. Are you finding that?
Yes, I think so. You know, I'd much rather know what the song is about than who wrote it, who's even singing it, who's playing on it. You know, those things are very important in the beginning. But really, after you have enough birthdays, it's got to be about something.
Other than continuing to perform, you're going to record again?
I am. I am recording, and I'm doing it at home.
Okay.
And I started off with this lofty plan. My working title is Plus One, and that each song would be a duet featuring another player or a second singer or some such. Mm-hmm. And I thought, gee, that's a good idea. And then I got a couple songs in, listened back to the tracks, and I'd go, you know what else I hear on this? There went that idea out the window. The whole thing is just kind of unraveled, and what I'm doing is I've realized I've got 150 songs that I want to document and archive. In the process of doing that, I'm saying, well, hell, I want to make some CDs. So that's the way I'm going about it. I'm just sort of recording what it is I feel like these days.
A musician's and a songwriter's legacy is his music, after all.
That's right.
And I guarantee you, we all want to hear it.
Well, thank you. I'm going to give you what I got.
And we'll take it. Michael Johnson. So many good songs, nicely done. His biggest hit, Bluer Than Blue. And ironically, it's what we find ourselves now feeling, though we see a brighter side in the fact that his music more than lives on.
Life without you.
I hope somebody continues putting those songs together. As I said, we all want to hear it. Thanks to Ben, Kate, and Dean. That show, without whom Spectrum West would be just a shadow of itself. Coming up next week, we'll get to know a Northwest Wisconsin arts group, hear about how joining voices in song can make a big difference to the owner of each voice, and more. The Classic Big Band and the Nostalgics perform Friday at 7:30 p.m. at the Phipps Center in Hudson. And you can see oil paintings by Clinton Rost in the Phipps Gallery, sneaking in another Spectrum memo. For Jim Oliver, I'm Al Ross. Thanks for listening this week. We'll do it again next week. See you then.